All right, it's the Pop Tower Podcast. I'm Peter W. Dawson.
I'm James Bullock.
And we're here today to talk about television and movies. Still no word on if streaming counts as television anymore, if it should just be its own thing, but until that debate is finally solved, we're just going to keep on trucking. So, James, how you feeling this week?
You know what, after you said that, I feel a lot better because I think Ron Howard actually has the answer to that question.
What is the answer, Ron?
Get that contract, because everybody has a streaming contract now.
This is true. This is true. And if you're worried that your contract might be under threat, just remember to reload your biceps before you go into negotiations. I had to get that reference in somehow. We'll probably talk about that more later. I just love that that's a thing. Anyway, so today we're gonna talk about Arrested Development Season 5. Part one.
And then I was about to say Dash One.
Yeah, because it's 8 episodes, but the other 8 episodes are expected out later this year. And, well,
we have no idea when.
So. Hang on, I'm just gonna get into the history of this show for those who aren't familiar. So, Arrested Development ran for 3 seasons on Fox.
Mm-hmm.
And is generally considered one of the greatest comedies of the last 20 years.
Yeah. Wholeheartedly agree. Wholeheartedly agree.
And if for no other reason, it has some of the best left field humor and just like bizarre, because you can get jokes like weird homoerotic jokes. You can get clever narration jokes. I mean,
you can get people who have never seen a chicken alive try to pretend to be a chicken and do it horribly.
Yep. And you can even just get weird dialogue jokes like, These are my words, mother, from Army. And he's talking about stuffed animals. You know, just weird conversational bits. Not to mention just the fact that one of the characters is named Cobb.
Yeah. Can a stripper wear pants if he's not a stripper?
You get all these weird, like, philosophical questions. Yeah, so it was... But it was 3 seasons on Fox. Despite being one of the most critically beloved shows on the show, on the network, it was, of course, canceled because Fox has a nasty reputation about that.
Yeah, no, the worst part about it, they were switching times all the time, especially during the third season.
Yeah.
So nobody exactly knew when it was on.
Yeah. And so the big thing we had for cast was we had Ron Howard as the narrator.
Mm-hmm.
And he's great as the narrator, especially because awesome. he's very good at contradicting people in the most perfect way. And of course, he sets up one of my favorite gags, which is just the preview for next week, which is nonsense.
Yes. It never ties into it.
It's just a flat-out lie.
Utter nonsense.
Well, yeah, like, I remember there was one where Julie Louis-Dreyfus came in, pretended to be pregnant, and then the preview said, oh, she actually is now pregnant.
Yeah.
And of course, we never got follow-up on that, so it may not even be true. So it's like, we don't know if that actually happened. Yeah, so it follows the Bluth family, who sell frozen bananas. Right, that's probably
easy. There's always money in the banana stand.
Yeah. That's probably the easiest way to put it. And, yeah, we got Michael Bluth, and then we got Lindsay Bluth, and then we got...
It was the baby yeah. of the Bluth kids.
Yeah, oh, yeah, and I should say, yeah, Jason Bateman plays Michael. It's like,
mm-hmm.
if you aren't familiar with some of these actors, this is how a lot of them became famous. Like, not in the case of Portia de Rossi, who plays Lindsay, because she was on, I can't even think of the name of the show.
Yeah,
Ally
I know
DeBeal.
Exactly. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Will Arnett, of course, was on SNL before this, but he played Gob. Michael Cera, he was kind of around before, but this is really probably his breakout role.
This is unfortunately, he became kind of like the same thing like Napoleon Dynamite, where now everyone thinks of him as that awkward teenager, even though he doesn't look like an awkward teenager at all anymore.
No, he very much looks like a man.
Yeah.
He doesn't even look that twinky anymore.
No, not at all.
He's still got kind of the weird face, but I mean, I say that about a lot of people, so... He's not really picking up.
He looks really like an old man now more than he looks like a kid.
But Ilya Shawkat, I always forget how to pronounce her. It's maybe Funk, right?
Fuke.
Sorry. See, I watched the show over a week ago and I'm already forgetting how to pronounce the other names. Yeah, but it is maybe, right?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. I've never been that invested in her character. She's funny, though.
She's good for like one-off jokes. That's really it.
Yeah, that's really the thing. Of course, Tony Hale is Buster Bluth. This was probably Tony Hale's breakout role.
Yeah, definitely.
David Cross, Tobias,
Fuke.
Yeah, he's been around for a long time. I wouldn't say this.
Yeah, he was already famous on as a comedian before the show, but it was just like one of those things where I don't think anybody knew of him as good of an actor as this.
This is true.
Even though he's been in like certain comedy bits and Comedy Central shows before this, but it was always felt like just one hit kind of things. It never felt like
Mr. Show.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Mr. Show was probably the biggest thing he did before this, and he was in a lot of movies and stuff.
That's true.
And Jeffrey Tambor, very much a media veteran, which let's not touch some of that stuff, but yeah, he was around. And yeah, he plays George Bluth, who is the man who gets arrested, which is kind of the origin of the show's name comes from.
Yeah, he's the patriarch of the family. And he also plays his twin brother.
Yes, yes. George and Oscar, I believe it is.
Yes, Oscar Bluth, yeah.
And the always awesome Jessica Walter is Lucille Bluth.
Oh, man, so incredible.
Yeah, and that's all we're going to say about that. Oh, no, except, you know, fun fact, she's also on Archer.
Yes.
I don't want to go off on an Archer tangent.
I just say that they really patterned her character on Archer after her character on Arrested Development.
Yeah. So, oh, right, I was doing the... Because I was looking at some of the guest cast, and I remembered, and sorry, I just had a whole thing. I had a weird vision. So, we were talking about three seasons it was canceled on Fox, and what happened was Netflix brought back in 2013.
Yeah.
So it was a hell of a gap, but they did, what was it, 10 episodes?
I believe it was 10, it might have actually been 14.
That many?
Yeah, as I remember, it was pretty big. Or it just felt really long.
Well, yeah, because
it was actually 15.
Holy hell.
I thought it was 14. Wow.
I thought it was 10, so it goes to show how much of an impact it had on me. Because the big thing was they had to, because everyone was so busy, it was hard to get everyone in the same scene.
Right, and then they spent a lot of the, like, two-thirds of the season just like with single character episodes, where they would just focus on one character per episode.
Yeah, which was an interesting experiment, but it didn't really work. I mean, it was still funny. Right.
Like, it was still funny at points.
Yeah, like, no one is ever going to say the show is not funny. But that experiment also really dragged itself down a bit.
Right, and it just showed the strength of the entire cast being together.
Yeah, because it was better when they could play off each other.
Right, right, and that was without that, I think the show really lacked. By the end of the season, it got a lot better, because they started coming together. But those first few episodes, especially, I think like the second episode where they focused on George Bluth Sr. trying to buy land in Mexico, was one of the worst episodes I think I've ever seen in the show's history.
Yeah, you're not wrong. In this case, yeah, season 5, the family's together a lot more, and. It's interesting because like this first arc, we can give this part away. It's kind of a whodunit with maybe a little bit of a Hangover vibe to it, because Lucille Two or what's Austero, I believe her last name is.
Yeah, Lucille Austero. Yeah,
she disappears, and what the heck's going on with that is just kind of a big old mystery.
Yeah,
but we also
because what was it, Cinco de Cuatro?
Yeah. It's just a whole thing. And
from the last season to the end of the last season. Because, okay, one of the running gags when it comes to Job or Gob, it's spelled Gob. It's spelled G-O-B, but they pronounce it as Job.
I always call him Gob, and, though.
Yeah, I know. it's actually a joke in the season, like, what a Gob.
Yeah, I know.
But one of the running gags with his character is that he carries around forget-me-nots, which are actually just roofies. And he roofied Michael, his own brother.
That's right.
To make him forget something that he saw.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, unfortunately, Michael forgets everything about the day before, which includes the disappearance of Lucille, too.
Yeah. So he's got to kind of repeat everything. And at the same time, he's dealing with problems like him and his son were dating the same woman.
Yeah. It was actually Ron Howard's daughter.
Illegitimate. I want to get into that. There's a lot of stuff we probably shouldn't get into, but I kind of want to get into that just because this is like the first time we've seen Ron Howard on the show.
Yes.
So it's one of the more weird meta jokes of the whole season, and there's some pretty priceless bits. Like, I should just call him Joe for simplicity. I keep calling him Bob, though. I started doing that when I watched the show, even because I saw it spelt before I heard it pronounced, and I just kept calling it that. This is a decade-long habit of mine. It's not going to be easily fixed. Just putting that out there. But, so he goes to, the family thing, and Ron Howard's just like, hey, welcome to the family barbecue. And it's just... But, yeah, it doesn't... Didn't he dye his hair? No, sorry, that was George Michael.
George Michael, thank you. I was going to say Michael Jr. No, George Michael.
Wow, I cannot believe it. Brain farted. How the hell did I confuse Michael Cera with, anyway, we'll learn it, yeah.
So George Michael is trying to break off with Rebel Alley, who's, of course, like you said, Ron Howard's illegitimate daughter. And he dyes his hair, but it comes out Ron Howard. It comes out Howard family red instead of pink.
Yeah, it's specifically Howard red. I think is what they flat out call it.
Yeah, and during the time we actually see Ron on screen, and he's talking and having normal moments, but then there's still like a part of him that's still the narrator as you're watching him on screen, which is one of the best bits in the entire season, and. Actually produced one of my favorite jokes of the entire season because it was so bad and corny and tied into George Michael's character so well when he was just saying that he didn't like hot dogs, he loved them. And everybody kind of gave that hokey laugh like you would see in a 1950s sitcom.
Which seems about right when you consider who we're talking about.
When you think about who you're talking about with Ron Howard and his family, like he just fits so well in that old dynamic.
Yeah, the family barbecue was pretty great.
Yeah.
And then, and then the punchline with Buster. I don't want to give that away, but that was great.
If we can spoil a little bit when it comes to Buster, he tries to be a Stepford man again. He tries to be seen and not heard, and then takes it to a whole nother level where he doesn't want to be seen at all. Yeah. And it turns into him really getting himself in trouble. And it just creates one of the best parts of the season because his dad tries to give him some advice, and it just doesn't work out well at all.
Yeah, well, that's basically the season. Like, at what point, don't they have to accept an award at the banana stand even though the banana stand's missing?
Oh, yeah, but it's an award they made for themselves.
Right.
And poor and Tobias, which is another one of the best parts of the season for me, is just Tobias's inability to become an accepted part of the family. Which has been, you know, a character arc for him throughout the entire series.
Yep.
But him trying to pretend to be family members to the point that once he can't be that person, because that person actually shown back up, he tries to be a banana. And even the banana stand's gone.
It's like, you know, he's got nothing.
He's got nothing.
But I also appreciated that Steve Holt returned.
I was just about to say, man, Steve Holt got fat. I'm sorry.
It's good to see him, though.
He was unrecognizable.
Yeah, but he did the iconic, George Senior.
Yeah, I love the fact that I think Michael came back to the old house, and he saw Steve, had no idea who it was, and Steve was telling everybody that was in the family where they were, and he had no idea why this kid knew it.
Yeah, and they also do, like, callbacks to, like, the first season.
Yeah!
Isn't like, the third or fourth episode maybe suggests kissing George Michael?
There's a moment, because there's another character dynamic with, maybe always trying to get attention from her parents.
Yeah.
And them just neglecting her at every turn. Like, they really don't care. But they do. It's just a very definition of dysfunctional, just like the whole family is, but they take it to another level. And one of the running gags has always been this attraction between Mabee and George Michael. And we find out later on, I believe in the third season, that really Mabee is a test tube baby. So she's like not really blood related, but it's still, they're still cousins, so they still see themselves in this way. And the family does too. So in an attempt to kind of mess up her mother's attempt at a campaign, because we can spoil this in the trailer, they're trying to run for, what is she running for again? What was Lindsay running for?
I don't even remember.
Yeah,
Was it
because it was such a
Congress?
short, yeah, I think so, but it was such a small part of the season. And maybe it's actually her campaign manager. So her idea is to, during a speech, make out with George Michael.
Yeah.
And to top it off, she wants to get fake teeth so she looks like a meth head. So not only is she kissing her cousin, but she's also on meth.
Yep. Yeah, it's just running for Congress.
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah, it's
There's
like,
so much they threw out the wall of this season, I tell you.
oh yeah, there's so much. I mean, they even like reference, was it? It's like, is it Tobias is gonna have to make it do, impersonate George. It's like he's done this before, and he
Yeah.
did.
Oh, there's also some callbacks to not only stuff that happened in the last season, but also the relationships with other people, like Tony Wonder, which is Ben Stiller's character
Yep.
that we've seen, I think, since like the second season.
Yeah, because he was in season
And
four.
yeah, and I love the fact that there was a joke between a Job and somebody. I don't want to spoil too much for that one. That it was a gay joke, like just a fraudulent slip by
Freudian slip.
Job. Yeah. And I love the fact that Tobias finally actually got that. Like, because he said so much stuff during the series that everybody else says, you know what? Maybe you're not thinking about what you're saying, or you just can't hear it like everybody else does. And for the first time, he actually heard somebody say something that was really, 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 really bad for your character, and he actually got it.
It's a whole thing.
Yeah. I guess it's so much stuff, like you said earlier, that's just kind of dictated by the fact that this was built on the idea of people who have watched the show or really enjoyed the previous seasons will understand it a lot more than people that are just jumping in.
Yeah. Well, Tobias has always been one of those things because they implied at one point that he was actually supposed to be albino African.
Yeah.
But it ended up just becoming gay jokes.
Yeah.
So there's theory that that's one of the reasons he's always so insecure, which I can understand.
Yeah. That ties into his never nude phobia.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of things that go on with him. And of course, that one time he classically painted himself blue.
Yeah. I just blew myself.
Yep. I think that's one of the
You
most
really,
iconic jokes in the whole series.
yeah. You really need to. He said you, and then and Michael tells him you really just need to carry around a tape recorder.
Yeah, it's usually that, like narrator jokes, and of course the no touching, which we do get this
Oh
season.
yeah. No, which was ironic because we had a moment of touching and it was actually celebrated.
Yeah, I know. That's really kind of the funny thing. But no, I'd say this season is pretty strong. It's gonna be interesting given like how well the development's been going with the show.
Yeah, that's the problem because, just a spoiler right now, it ends on a cliffhanger. The first
Yeah.
eight episodes end on a big cliffhanger, and I thought I was missing something. Like, I really did. I had no idea that they were splitting it up into to two halves
Yep.
until I finished watching the eighth episode.
Yep.
And as we said, unfortunately, we don't have no idea when it's coming out.
Supposed to be later this year.
That's what they're saying, but like, there's no. I don't know if they're maybe doing a little bit of reshoot or just trying to change some stuff in post-production or what, but there's
Yeah.
no hard confirmation of when and later on this year we might get the second half.
It's funny too, because like I put this with the movie we're going to talk about later, because I thought in part, you know, the level of detail and everything, it's like maybe we'll go well with one of those, and we can, you know, if we don't have much to say about the movie, we can always talk more about the show. But honestly, we can't, I don't even know if there's much more we can say about the show because it's comedy.
Right.
It's just it. If you were a fan of the original three seasons, this is a lot closer to the
To
first three
that
than yeah.
than season four ever was.
Yeah, I don't think there's a legitimately bad episode in there.
No, not at all.
I don't even think there's really a weaker one, come to think of it.
No, I think it's a very consistent season.
Yeah, it's. If you don't like meta humor, the Howard Barbecue may not do as much for you. Like, but it's still pretty funny. And again, like, I love the fact that the whole Howard family is there and playing themselves.
It's awesome, and even his father just be
Yep.
that whole moment.
I really appreciated that.
I did. I really did. It was one of those one rare moments, a really kind and sweet moment, and then we had just that other turn where it just wow, you really actually kind of went dark a little bit there.
It kind of is. But it's pretty well earned, I gotta say. Especially considering who it involves.
It really was.
Yeah, I don't know if there's much else we can say.
No, really solid episode. Like I said, as consistent as it could be. It might not stand the test of time in terms of like individual episodes and some of the earlier stuff, but I think it's more of a return to form than anything of season four.
So I think we're good to
It's up for another
move
80
on to
years.
next week, where it'll turn out that James has secretly been two dwarves this whole time. And I'm talking like Tolkien dwarves. And I'm sure we'll follow up on that next week. Narrator, there was no next week.
This week.
Technically true, because well, I'll mention this again at the end of the episode, but we're not gonna do an episode next week. We're gonna go back to the every 2 week format just because there's less movies to talk about. So,
We're ending our summer blockbuster movie reviews with this one, and I'm happy to say that I think we ended on a high note.
we totally are. Like, have you seen what the critics are saying about this one?
Oh yeah, they're giving it one of the greatest action movies of all time kind of tags already.
I don't want to go that far, but I really
Same
do.
here. Like, it's just too fresh.
Yeah, that's always the thing. It's too fresh, and I really hate always putting something up on that highest pedestal, which is why even when I really like something, I'll still find something to say, even if it's mostly a nitpick. Because I don't like saying this is perfection, because that always biases people. They just cross their arms and go, You know
And
what I
then
mean? It's
you
like when
walk
you
away from
tell
it,
people.
and then if somebody comes back to it, in 5 or 10 years, same thing, like, especially when it comes to video games,
Oh, yeah.
you look at it, it's like, how is this so great?
Yeah. Well, in this case, we have a very interesting movie because we have Mission Impossible Fallout. Burr, 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 burr. And guess what? It involves plutonium. What? You mean the movie with Fallout in the name involves nuclear weapons? Who'd have thought?
Promise me the plutonium.
So, the plot in this movie, if we have to talk about a weakness, isn't that strong. But it's not bad. I just want to get that out of the
No, it's just
way.
average. It's stereotypical action movie, super kind of espionage average.
Yeah, like, because, I mean, the basic thing is bad guys steal some plutonium. Ethan Hunt has to get it back, but the CIA is really upset that they got the plutonium in the first place. They're like, all right, we better keep an eye on this Ethan Hunt guy. And no, Ethan Hunt is not the bad guy. They're not going to do that. It's going to be someone else who turns out to be the bad guy. Probably
I
the
love the
guy
fact
who.
they try to give that illusion so early in the movie, like, yeah, he's Ethan Hunt's actually the bad guy this time. It's like, no, it's
Nope.
not.
No, I'm pretty sure it's the guy who looks evil.
That every time you look at him, he's got his eyes cocked to the side. His head is straight, but his eyes are leering at you from another angle.
You know he's ready to reload his fists and throw another hurting. That was one of the greatest moments in that trailer. Just when Henry Cavill, who plays August Walker, who is totally a good guy, you guys, totally a good guy, even though I think they legitimately advertised him as playing the villain early on. And it's pretty obvious he's playing the villain. Like, this isn't even really a spoiler, but like, I love the part in the trailer where he walks forward, he readies his fist, and seemingly like they call it reloads his fist or reloads his biceps, and then like the music thunders as he throws a punch. It's one of my favorite editing parts in a trailer ever because it just feels so meaty and raw. It's like, yeah, manly men throwing manly punches. You have to fight Superman, Ethan Hunt. You're screwed. Like, I'm like, yeah. Anyway, yeah, so we kind of went into it without really talking about the franchise. Yeah, because it stars Ethan Hunt, or Tom Cruise as Ethan Hunt.
Yeah, it stars Ethan Hunt.
Tom Cruise is back as Ethan Hunt, the Impossible Mission Force, or IMF agent, which is like a subdivision of the CIA, I believe.
Yeah,
because they're technically under the CIA umbrella, but it's like a special department where they do, like, essentially heists.
Right.
That's probably the easiest way to describe it, because, I mean, the Mission Impossible movies are part spy, part heist. And, of course, they usually have, you know, a decent amount of action scenes that could be more, like, just standard thriller fare, gunfights, whatever. Although, I always like it more when they don't do big gunfights, because that feels less Mission Impossible than, like...
I know, like, that was the... it actually had a couple of gunfights in this movie that I felt like, not as fun as some of the other stuff we've seen.
Yeah, I much prefer the fist fights and, like, the close quarters struggling with a knife type stuff. Like, that feels more Mission Impossible. Like, in the first one, they barely used their guns.
Yeah.
And then 2 and 3, they used it a lot, but then back in 4, I think less than 30 bullets were fired?
Yeah, they tried to really scale it back.
Yeah, there was very little gunplay. And then 5, it was back up a bit, but I think it was only like 70 bullets?
Yeah, like, it was pretty much on par with this one.
Yeah, this one was a little higher, especially at one point when Henry Cavill, a.k.a. August Walker, pulls out a big gun.
Yeah.
Was that the automatic shotgun? The AA-12?
So.
Yeah, I believe that's the AA-12, which...
Yeah.
I can't remember what the A's exact... Well, one of them probably stands for automatic.
Yeah.
I think it's automatic assault 12-gauge
assault,
shotgun.
Yeah.
Which is essentially a cannon.
Yeah.
Like, in the Expendables movies, they use it to tear people in half, and yeah, it would. It really would. It's a pretty powerful gun. But yeah, and then we get Ving Rhames once again back as Luther Stickwell. Ving Rhames, we don't see a lot of these days. I think he
not at all.
Doesn't he mostly do like straight to DVD movies when he's not doing these?
Yeah, I believe so now. Yeah, that's his wheelhouse.
Well, he's made his money at this point, I think.
Yeah, and it's funny because he's another. And I know we did a lot of WWE references in the last one. But I have to say, like, people give WWE a hard time for, like, their monsters and giants kind of turning into human cuddly figures. And Ving is so cuddly in this.
Oh, he's always been cuddly.
I know, but no, like, back in the early days, they always felt like he was the hardest dude in the world. And now it's like, he's just so cuddly.
I don't know, I thought he was just more, like, playful, bantery type.
Yeah?
Maybe a little cool, like, if it was a different movie, he'd probably be played by Wesley Snipes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I never thought he was hard.
Oh.
And then, yeah, Simon Pegg, who's been a regular since Mission Impossible 3, after he made a joke about being in Mission Impossible 3.
Oh.
I always love that story. It's like, he apparently told somebody at the Hollywood Reporter, it's like, you're more famous. Like, oh, I'm not that famous. It's not like I'm going to be in Mission Impossible 3. Did it. Hey, do you want to be in Mission Impossible 3? That's my fast forward sound. Yeah, so he's back as Benji, and then Rebecca Ferguson's actually back as Ilsa Foust. She's the MI6 agent who's, like, kind of rogue. It's weird. Because she got burned, but she might still be with MI6.
Yeah, it was really weird,
Like, I think part of the movie is kind of a continuation, because this movie is probably the most direct sequel we've had.
I was about to say, like, this is the only one I feel like you don't necessarily have to come in with a full knowledge of this franchise.
No.
But at least have seen the previous one.
Yeah, it's definitely a good idea to have seen the previous one, and it's probably a good idea to have seen the first one, too. Because they do reference the first one in a decently big way, although how much it matters is debatable.
Right.
So, the last one especially, because that established, in particular, not only Ilsa Foust's character, you get a good idea who Benji is if you hadn't seen Benji before, Luther's still pretty well established in that one, and then, couple other characters, because Alan Hunley, played by Alec Baldwin.
Yes.
Yeah, he's a pretty major character in the last one, and he's in this one, too. And then Sean Harris's character, Solomon Lane.
Yeah, I was about to say, you would not get the importance of his character.
Solomon Lane's a way better villain name than August Walker. August Walker isn't bad, but it sounds more like he should be the gruff, bland protagonist. Which I guess was their attempt to mislead us. Where Solomon Lane is like, that's a villain. That's like the mastermind villain right there. Yeah, and he's very much best. How do you even describe? Is he kind of like if Steve Jobs was evil British man? Because he always gives me a Steve Jobs vibe with the way he moves his hands.
Yeah, you might be right with that.
I don't know. I might be reading too much into it. Yeah.
And that's how they described him when they were trying out for the part. Like, we were thinking of Steve Jobs, but British and a little evil.
Yeah. Well, not a little evil. He's supposed to be a grand mastermind. Because the
Yes.
Syndicate are supposedly, like, the mastermind villains behind a lot of incidents.
Right.
The Mission Impossible franchise pulled it off a lot better than, what do you call it? Spectre did for the James Bond franchise.
Oh, my.
And, yeah. But, so yeah, like I said, the premise is the IMF team, they had to let the bad guys capture some plutonium. And the villains, they're like remnants of the syndicate called the Apostles? Yeah. So Ethan has to go and like get the nukes back and make sure that the bad guys are not gonna nuke the world. But there's complications because there's crazy stuff going on, and CIA thinks he might be evil, but he's not evil. But he has
Right.
to go rogue again because he always has to go rogue.
He always.
I'm trying to think if
I
there's a
can
movie where he didn't go rogue.
never.
Nope.
I can't think of one.
I don't remember if he went rogue in
That
two, but he probably did.
that's a part of his character. Like, he has to go rogue every time he's in a mission.
Yeah, because one, that was a whole thing. I think it happened in two. Three, it did later on. That became a big thing later on. And then four, yep. Yeah, well, that was the whole point.
Yep,
And
that was
then,
exactly.
yeah, and five, it was essentially what happened too. Yeah, like it was.
Yeah, and five, it was in the title.
My God, he's gone rogue 6 times.
Like, they should not be mad anytime he does it.
No, it's like, oh, looks like we got another rogue situation. All right, add it to the list. It's like a chalkboard.
Yeah.
And it'd be funny if they had the chalkboard and it's got like more than just the movies we've seen. So it's like 40.
It's more than six. It's like 127 at
I
least.
was gonna say 47, but that works too.
He just can't help himself. It's like, he's a little bit wild, that's all. He just can't help himself. He has to go rogue every time.
And Tom Cruise is at his Tom Cruisiest
Oh my goodness,
in
this
that.
man.
Well, this is a guy. I always loved the story Cameron Diaz told when they went to film Night and Day, which wasn't a very good movie, but the
Okay.
stunts were still pretty good. And one of the reasons is when Tom Cruise is like apparently like in the car driving around the set, he'll be just in work mode, looking, seeing where like he can send zip lines, where he can send ropes, etc. You know, like what kind of stunts can I do in this
What can I
area?
do with this?
Yeah.
What can I do in this area?
Yeah, he's very much on point in that respect, and it's pretty awesome. Like, whatever you want to say about the man, I appreciate how intense he gets about that, if nothing else. If he's just
Yeah,
adrenaline
he
junkie,
truly cares.
or yeah, like, and he cares about the realism, which I mean, which led to the funny moment in The Mummy where they have that realistic airplane sequence. It's like, this really wasn't integral to the plot, guys. And considering how many effects work this movie's gonna need, did you really want to do this? Whereas, yeah, in this case, it's a little more integral to the plot because it's very much still a grounded franchise, just with slightly sci-fi tech. It's not as sci-fi as it could be, though, really.
No, not at all.
Yeah, sorry, I was waiting for you to either correct me or, I mean, some of the stuff's pretty
No,
elaborate.
no.
It's nonsense, but it's like, okay, I understand how
I can
this.
see this actually happening.
Yeah, it's not like James Bond, where just everything has a laser all of a sudden that points, which is why
Yeah.
they had to dial that back.
This pen, a laser. This walking cane, a laser. This banana, a laser.
Okay. This iPhone, a vibrator, but that's for later. Nearly said something worse there, too. I get away with a vibrator truck. I think we're safe with that. No, there's a lot of great real stunts in this, and it does make a difference, no matter what people tell you. I kind of wish they weren't filtered to hell, but that's just the way modern cinema is now.
Yeah.
The color is just at least not entirely washed out. Like, it always annoys me, though, when you get like these. Like, they're supposed to be overcast, but they look wrong overcast. It's weird.
Right. You can tell it's done in the daytime, but it doesn't look right.
Yeah.
It looks like the fallout has actually happened.
Yeah, like legitimately, this is starting to frustrate me with the more realistic movies because they still have the filters. Because they will never not get rid of those because, in general, they do help. with like consistent lighting for filmmaking, so I understand why they use them. I just don't like them. I don't think I'll ever fully like them. I mean, even in movies like Avengers and stuff, that annoyed me.
Mm-hmm.
And like, yeah, again, this is just something we're gonna have to accept. So I'm not exactly holding it against this film. Is when you have these epic stunts where Tom Cruise is dangling from a helicopter, or when he's doing nonsensical jumps or whatever, or
when he's
crazy
running
driving.
Like he should be in the Olympics.
Yep. Of course, there's plenty of running because Tom Cruise always runs.
Man, that guy. He's got to be one of the fastest runners I've ever seen on film.
I don't know about that, but he's definitely got to be one of the best endurance runners.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's true, too. I can't think of editing, too. Like, how much are we editing? How many breaks is Tom Cruise really taking?
And since we're talking about franchises, the Mission Impossible still seems to understand. I want to compare it to another franchise a little bit. This one's a little more of an unusual comparison, but one of the big appeals of Die Hard, at least to me, was always that John McClane very much felt like a real dude.
Right.
Like, you know, he's just a guy. He happens to be a cop. But, I mean, if you watch most of the action scenes in the early movies, he, like, if someone's got, like, martial arts or whatever, he's just kind of clumsily defending himself, or if somebody tries to shoot him and he shoots back, he just unloads his pistol.
Right.
Like, in the first movie, when he's under the table, he shoots a guy way more times than he needed to. Like, I think the second bullet hit him, but he emptied the clip, and it's like, this is what a real guy would do, though. He would want to make sure that dude's dead.
Yeah, he's running on adrenaline at this point.
Exactly. And he knows the guy has, like, submachine guns and stuff. He can use those. Yeah, in this case, Ethan Hunt, he's a super spy, but he's still human.
Yeah.
Like, one of my favorite parts in Mission Impossible 4 is when his leg gets broken.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, because it happens so quickly, and you're just like, oh, man, his leg actually got, oh, he's going to be crippled for the rest of the fight. Like, that's a legitimate, oh, man. And it was just so simple how it happened. It's like, wow. It probably helps justify why he was struggling in a fight against a dude who was like 50-something, but, you know.
Right.
Because we're going to pretend Ethan Hunt isn't as old as he is. Was Tom Cruise like 54 now?
Yeah, if that young, I'm not make sure.
And he might be 56 or something. Yeah, he's 56.
Yeah, 56. Wow.
I said it immediately after. I'm like, no, that's not right. Because he's...
No.
Because I remember...
I'm not giving him enough credit.
Well, I remember his interview with Colbert once where it stated Colbert's like 2 years younger than him, but looks older. Which is true. Because Tom Cruise and Jon Stewart are the same age. And if you...
Okay.
Look at them side by side, it's like, nope.
That's his older brother.
Yeah. Whatever the hell Tom Cruise has done, like, you can't
levels,
say
man.
It hasn't
he keeps
worked.
Those levels down.
Sorry?
He keeps those street levels down.
I really don't want to make jokes about that. There's your one obligatory joke.
There you go.
Alright, yeah. I really don't want to touch that in this review. Again, I'll leave this in though, so people know that we're just not touching it.
Right.
But no, there you go. It's a good time to use it. Yeah. So, but I was saying how human Ethan Hunt is, because he at one point, like, probably my favorite scene in the whole movie is just when he goes to jump through a window.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it's a big chase.
He hates himself. He's just like, why am I doing this? Hashtag Monday motivation. Here we go.
Yeah. And the best part about it is the fact that he's actually communicating with Benji during this whole sequence.
Yeah.
And he's trying to explain to him, you know, what I have to do right now if you want to succeed in what we're trying to accomplish. And the people around him are watching in awe. And one woman has no choice but to hand him a chair.
I know.
Break the window.
I know. That's great.
Because she knows it's inevitable. Like, it has to happen.
Yep. It was actually interesting, too, because in this movie, Benji and Ilsa had to team up at one point.
Yeah.
Because this is one of the funny thing about the franchise is, while you get certain cliches, Ethan getting the girl hasn't always been one of them.
Right. I was actually very surprised in the way they went with it. Yeah. You know, I'm not going to spoil anything, but
I was happy with
it. Yeah, I was very interested in the way they handled it, and the conclusion was very, very satisfying.
Yeah. Because, I mean, he kind of had a love interest in the second one, and the first one he had one, but she died.
Right.
That movie's over 20 years old now, so.
And I think it was like one of those things where they set it up so early in the movie with this one. Like, you thought something like that would happen in terms of, like, him getting the girl in the way that you would think it would happen.
Yep. But nope.
No, not at all.
Yeah, like, that's one of the interesting things about the franchise is that they've always subverted your expectations. It's funny, too, because, like, in 4, one of the big... Because in 3, one of the big things is he gets married to Michelle Moynihan's character, Julia. Mm-hmm. But then in 4, it seems like she's been killed off-screen, and she was reduced to a cameo because the budget of that film ran into a lot of problems, so they couldn't afford Ving Rhames or Michelle Moynihan for more than a cameo.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, they sorted it out with the next few movies, but... But the budgets have been thankfully more controlled and everything. Because, I mean, this one was still, like, under $200 million, which is surprising when you consider how big the franchise
the
is.
Stuff that they, the stuff that they did in this thing.
Yeah, and everything. It's like, what, really? It, I guess practical effects still are cheaper to a degree, and that was probably one of the reasons why. Because, was it Ghost Protocol? What was the budget of that one? Do we have a list? Or budget. Doesn't say... I can quit. Oh, here we go. Yeah, because Ghost Protocol was actually cheaper than Mission Impossible 3, because Mission Impossible 3 was $150 million. But then Rogue Nation went back up to $50 million, and then this one hit $178, which is the highest one to date, but the movie's already made at least $200 million worldwide, so it'll be fine.
Right.
I mean, compared with the first one, it was worldwide, it made a $450 million on an $80 million budget. Then Mission Impossible 2 made over $500 million. 3 only made about $400 million. Ghost Protocol made almost $700 million. About the same amount for Rogue Nation. This might be the last one if this one doesn't get close to the $600 million mark, but
it's
still a solid profit.
Right now, it really is, but it might be an issue now because of, like you said, even though it's done $200 million already, it's still very close. And considering, like, how the summer's been, and with everything that's come out beforehand, I don't know. Like, the only thing I'm really hoping at is the fact that it's getting such critical acclaim that a lot more people will see it.
Yeah, and I don't think it's fully open internationally yet, because I think most of it's still been domestic.
Alright, awesome.
Because China's doing some more, because China's pushing a lot more major movies. Like, if you look at the top 10 box office for this year, a lot more Chinese films that are mostly only in China are making gangbusters again, so...
Yeah.
They've been doing that thing where they release a big movie that they know their audience is going to love, and they purposely don't have, like, big international blockbusters coming in at the same time.
Right.
Because we saw that before with Wolf Warrior 2 last year, I think.
Right. We both were trying to figure out what that was.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a sequel to... And the first Wolf Warrior did do well, but, I mean, the second one eclipsed it crazily, and... Because the Chinese market is, you know, usually considered the second or third biggest market in the world, it becomes a factor. It really does. It's always impressive, though, when movies defy expectations in certain ways. Like, I mean, one of the things to always admire about the Fast and Furious franchise is it's got one of the most diverse casts in the world, and the movies make crazy amounts of money. So it's not just, you know, oh, you have to have so-and-so protagonist of whatever ethnicity. No.
Exactly. Exactly.
And in this case, I guess the Mission Impossible franchise, well, not necessarily a celebration of diversity, you know, with, what, 2 African-American characters in this movie?
Yeah!
And that's about it for diversity? Pretty much everyone else is white?
Yeah, you're right, yeah.
So not a win in that respect. But definitely a win for practical effects, and, you know, Tom Cruise can still pull it off, despite being 56.
Oh my goodness, man. There's so many moments of just grittiness when it comes to the practical effects when he was... I know it's actually in the trailer, so it's not a big spoiler when he's driving the motorcycle and it hits a car.
Yeah.
And when he gets up, the just sheer obviousness that this guy actually got rattled.
Yeah.
Is seen on screen. You could tell that this was somebody that really hit a car and he really got rattled.
Yeah. I think the only other major critique... I don't know how much this is true in this one, but I have a friend who always feels like the only person who can defeat Ethan Hunt is Ethan Hunt, like, or Mother Nature. Because, like, in Ghost Protocol was a big one for him, because he felt like the only reason the movie didn't end in Abu Dhabi or where the heck it was, with the building. Dubai. That was
right,
Dubai.
Right.
Sorry, not Abu Dhabi. Dubai.
Yeah.
The only reason it didn't end in Dubai is because a sandstorm beat him. Because Mother Nature was against Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
But I would say in this one, he still felt very vulnerable.
Yeah, for him, like every time you feel like he could have a chance of losing.
Absolutely. I mean, there's always great tension, because especially when they do it the heist thing right, you know exactly what can go wrong, and you can really understand, well, yeah, don't do this. Well, it may still happen. But it's a fun thrill ride. It's one of the better movies we've had this summer by far.
Oh, hands down.
If it wasn't for the fact that, because this came out just, this episode's going to air in, well, into August, but if it wasn't for the fact that Ant-Man and the Wasp came out in early July, I mean, this would be the best July movie.
Yeah, hands down. I would wholeheartedly agree. Like, it's definitely going to be one of my, at this point, is one of my top five movies of the year.
Yeah, just in terms of, thrilling, because, I mean, what are you going to drop? Are you going to do, Black Panther, Infinity War, I guess Ant-Man would be on there, and then Mission Impossible, and one more? Some combination, or would you drop one of the Marvel movies off there?
No, if anything, maybe Deadpool.
Okay.
Let me go back. No, Deadpool's getting dropped, because we got Ready Player One, so...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Deadpool gets dropped for Mission Impossible.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, Deadpool 2 was still really good, but yeah.
No, I would have to drop it.
Yeah, I know there's problems with Ready Player One, but I mean, that had that whimsy value that... I genuinely started to tear up in that movie at the end. That movie hit me. Also starring Simon Pegg, by the way. He was in this movie.
Yeah, true.
No, but absolutely, if you have the chance to go see it, go see Mission Impossible 6. This is probably the only time you're going to need to see one of the previous movies. It's not 100% necessary, but it's more necessary than it's been before.
Yeah, there are little things that you'll miss out on, and I'd appreciate if you don't see it. But overall, yeah, I have to say it's one of those movies that critically is getting a lot of praise, and it's well worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because we always talk about just being able to, like, just relax in the movies, have a good time. You really can relax with this one in, like, the best possible way, because it's just, like, just be happy.
Yeah, It's almost 2.5 hours. It doesn't feel like it at all.
Yeah. Yeah, like, this is the type of movie you would actually want to sit down... Like, if you're at home, you would want to sit down and watch. You wouldn't be like, I'm going to watch it while chatting with friends on Facebook or, maybe cooking something. No. This is like, you want to have your full attention.
Mm-hmm. And pulls you in, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Because there's nice little subtle bits and everything. There's weird lighting effects that make it look like Henry Cavill suddenly grew a beard. I love that. The other day, I was legitimately walking around doing the reload my fist thing just because I wanted to stretch, and I thought it was a fun... Because I'm assuming that's why the character did it. Like, he was, like, limbering up before he throws his next set of hurting bombs. To quote Rocky 6. It was Rocky 6 where he said hurting bombs.
Yeah.
But I think that's probably going to do it for this episode, unless you have anything else to add.
No, just a great movie. Go check it out, definitely.
Yeah. Everybody plays their parts well. It's spot on.
Very much so.
Yeah, and...
We love you, Alec Baldwin.
Yeah. Despite everything,
screen time. He didn't get enough screen time this time. That's a flaw.
I just love how many controversial actors we've had on... Because we... In between everyone on Arrested Development... All the people on Arrested Development, where it's like, well, that's all you have to say about that. And then there's at least two on this one. I mean, oh, man.
Hollywood.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about you, Hogan. You've done enough controversy for one lifetime.
Two. If we ever do a wrestling episode, we should probably talk about that. I don't know how much we could add to the conversation.
Yeah, the greatest controversy in wrestling history.
But that would be
the greatest.
Sorry?
I said the greatest controversy in wrestling history. both on screen and off.
Don't know about that, but okay.
Starring Hulk Hogan and Triple H. Pure unabashed racism.
Well, oh, man. I think we're going to leave it there. I'm sure that won't make people cringe. Thank you, James.
Oh, just think about Tom Cruise running across a building very high up in the air and then deciding, you know what? I can do this. I'm going to jump over a building and break my leg.
Yeah. I wouldn't even make the jump. I'll trip on my way to the jump.
And I would bust my chin right on the edge of the, or on the ledge. Like, I'm out after that.
I'm gonna roll sideways, slide it to the ledge, bump it, somehow dislocate my shoulder in the bump.
I'll wake up as nighttime.
Time just skipped. All right, well, folks, until next time, have yourselves a good day.